for being here.
Of course.
I'm so excited that you're our first guest.
I'm excited to be a first guest too.
Yeah. You know, so when I came up with this idea, as I mentioned in the video I posted on social media, I have two really good friends. One of them who has been battling breast cancer for a few years now, and another friend whose mom just passed away. And I was like, trying to think, what can I do? You know, because you reach out, but it just doesn't feel like enough. But then at the same time, you don't even know what to say sometimes.
Yeah.
So I was really thinking about it. And one of my other friends, he thought of the idea of a podcast for it. And I was like, okay, this could be a good idea. Put some more thought into it. And I was like, I'm going to go with it. You know, let's run with it. And you were the first person that came to mind when I thought about this. Just because, you know, we're friends. We'll talk about how we know each other as well. But also, I see your posts on Facebook a lot. So just keeping up with your journey, I thought that you would be a perfect first guest for this. So
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Of course.
So for people who are listening, just a little background. It's really crazy that we both went to Monmouth University, both in ZTA. Yeah. And it's just crazy that, you know, it's been years since college for both of us.
Yeah.
It feels like an eternity from when I graduated. And it's just cool, you know, to reconnect where we are now and to do something like this. So that's really exciting. I feel that we
can. I'm excited about it. I think it's cool. I'm happy to help other people. So whatever I can do to help, I'm always down for it.
Yeah, thank you. I guess, so what, you know, we can do this any way you want. I didn't want to have a really strict structure because there are some things that maybe you don't want to share, some things that you do want to share that I didn't think of, but I figured we could start off just by talking about yourself. Maybe you can give some information about when you were diagnosed and what signs so people can understand the type of cancer that you've been battling with.
Okay, so October of 2014, I woke up like I did every single day. I don't remember exactly what day it was, which I should because I know every other date of everything that's happened to me since. But I woke up and there was a bump on the top of my foot. And I knew that I didn't hit my foot at, you know, in the middle of the night on anything. I didn't walk into anything. And before being diagnosed with cancer, I had something in that foot called RSD or reflex sympathetic dystrophy, or it's also known as CRPS, which is complex regional pain syndrome, where there's a trauma that your body apparently went through, or there could be no trauma whatsoever, but your body thinks that, your brain, I should say, thinks that there's a trauma there. So it hurts all the time. Something as little as water hitting it in the shower could make it feel like you broke your foot would cramp up, it can turn black and blue and purple. And so I had that going in that foot, you know, for a while. They had taken out two neuromas in weird spots in that foot years prior. And they told me like, okay. And then I was diagnosed with RSD and I had it for years. I mean, years. I could walk in the supermarket and the next minute I was on the floor because I could not walk at all. My foot was, I had my husband, well, at the time he was my boyfriend, but my boyfriend carried me out of the supermarket or my parents come and get me out of the supermarket. And you know, people wouldn't understand. I was hysterically crying on the floor. Didn't see anything happen to me, but I could just have stepped wrong. If someone stepped on my foot, forget it. That was like the worst. So I first thought like, oh, maybe it had something to do with the RSD. And so I called my pain doctor, the management doctor who was helping me through the RSD portion of my life. And he was like, I don't like the way that sounds. I'm going to send you for an MRI. And I said, okay. So I went for an MRI and the MRI technician came up to me and was like, when do you see your doctor again? And I was like, wait, what? You're not even supposed to tell me anything about these scans. Right. The fact that you're asking me, when am I seeing my doctor again? That kind of freaks me out a little bit. And he's like, you need to go see your doctor tomorrow morning, like when they open, call them right away, make an appointment. So now I come home with these slides from the MRI and my husband and boyfriend at the time, but now he's my husband. We're like putting it up to the light, trying to figure out what we're looking at. We have no clue. Right. So I go to the doctor and I walk in and he looks at it and he gets very upset. And I was like, great. He's like, you have a 1.5 centimeter tumor that's wrapped around your big toe, your toe next to it, pushing out the top of your foot and pushing down the bottom of your foot. I'm sending you to a doctor today and I want him to stick a needle in your foot and see if he can aspirate, you know, whatever's in your foot and get it out of there. So I was like, okay. So I went, he sticks the 18 gauge needle in my foot and nothing is coming out. So now he's not liking it. So now he decides he's sending me to another doctor. So now I go to this other doctor and that doctor's like, I'm not touching your foot based on your MRI, the fact that an 18 gauge needle went into your foot, nothing came out. He's like, if something was wrong with me or my family, this is the doctor I would go to. And he gives me a name of an oncologist. And wow. I was like,
so
okay.
That's the first time that you heard that. Okay.
And I wasn't thinking like cancer. Like I was like, oh, it's just a tumor. They're going to cut it out. Like the other neuromas and everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. And he ends up sending me to this oncologist. They are amazing. The team was phenomenal. Like I got upset at one point because he was pressing on my foot and pressing on it like hurts. And he apologized and he had to do it, but he had to see if he could feel the tumor. And so I started crying and one person brought over a glass of water. Another person's rubbing my back. Another person has a box of tissues. I'm thinking, this doesn't happen at regular doctors. Like you have to be some sort of special someone to work at like an oncologist or an oncology floor, because the type of people are incredible. They're amazing. They're so compassionate. It's like very
like angels.
Rare. Yeah. It's like, what happened here? So he had said to me, you know, it's probably cancer and we're probably gonna have to amputate. And I was like, wait, what? Well, I just got over the fact that like I had to come to an oncologist. Now you're saying it could be cancer and you're gonna probably have to amputate. And I was like, well, okay. So I like kind of let that like sink in my head. And so that was in December, like the beginning to middle of December. And I had had a trip planned to visit my parents who live in Las Vegas for Christmas to New Year's. So I said to him, do you want me to cancel a trip? Like, let me know, you know, we'll do it now. And he said, no, I want you to go on the trip. I want you to get yourself in a good frame of mind and come back. And in January, we're going to do the biopsy. And I was like, okay. So I went, saw my parents, had a great time, came back. And on January 9th, which was the day after my nephew's birthday, I had my biopsy done. And so I was supposed to go back to them on the 21st for the results. And I get a phone call on the 15th. And he's like, can you come in on the 19th? And as soon as he said that, I knew it wasn't good. Like that's never like a good sign. So we went in, it was me and my husband, and he was sitting in one corner of the room and I was sitting in the other. And the doctor comes in, sits down next to me, puts his hand on my leg where I had the cancer and said, I don't have good news for you. And I don't want you to Google what I tell you, because you're not going to find any good information there. It's not going to be good information. Because not only is it cancer, but it's an extremely rare form of cancer. It's a childhood cancer that mostly males get. And I got it at 35 and I'm very much female.
Right.
So I was like, okay. So I just remember the look on my husband's face of like pure terror. And I'm like thinking to myself, well, I have to listen to what he says, because now I have to go and tell everyone what just happened. So I used Facebook as my way of letting a lot of people know, because it was so much easier. I got to so many people in one post instead of having to text and call and email and everything else. And I know that they have like a thing called Caring Bridge, but I just felt like it was so much more work, because then all those people had to join if they wanted to be part of my journey and like all this other extra stuff. And I figured, you know what, Facebook, so many people have it and they already joined. They don't have to worry about it. If they want to see the post, they can. If they don't, they can block my post. Like it doesn't matter. And I still have people today that say to me, I normally don't go on Facebook. I only go on to see your posts and like Amazing. Read what you're writing. And so like, to me, it was like almost like a cathartic, you know, being able to like let it out on there and write everything. But I felt like I was always like a very strong person. So to me, it was more of like, okay, if I can help someone else by posting what I'm posting and saying like, go get something checked early. You know, if you find something, don't let it fester and wait until it's like the last minute and then they can't do anything about it. I figured this is the best way for me to do it. So I was diagnosed with synovial cell sarcoma stage 3. And now it's stage 4 because it has metastasized from my foot to my groin to both lungs to 2 spots in my rib space and the pleura of my lung, which is like the lining of the lung. So It just keeps going. Apparently, I'm a very good host and it likes to be inside of me. I've tried everything in my power to get rid of it. I mean, anything that they've ever said to me as a treatment or a study or whatever, I've always signed up for and said, go for it. Because, you know, at 35, like, you don't expect to hear those words. And then they also say to you, and most people don't make it past the 5-year mark. I'm at the 5-year mark. Wow. So, you know, it was like, okay, well, we're going to not be a statistic. We're going to be an exception to the rule and we're going to beat this. So that's just like what I've had going in. And I've even said to other people that have gotten diagnosed with, you know, different types of cancer or other things, if the doctor tells you something negative, don't harbor on it. You know, think of the positive. What can you do? What are some other treatments we can do? Is there something else I can do? Like, is there a tea I can drink or an oil I can rub on my body or a pill I can, you know, anything. I just was always like, I'll try anything. Even, so I'm Jewish and a lot of people were like hesitant to say that they were having their church pray for me or like prayer cards or anything. And I said, no, I will take every prayer and prayer shawl and card and holy water, whatever you want to give me. I will take it all because I am not discriminating and I need everybody on deck to help me out with
Absolutely.
This. So, you know, I wasn't afraid to do any of that stuff. I would bring the prayer shawls with me to every hospital stay I had. Somebody even made me a small one that is in my pocketbook and I carry that with me. I will take it all. I'm not going to complain, but right. You know, it's crazy because you don't expect this. You're always like, oh, I never thought it would happen to me kind of thing. And oh, it happened to me. It's still happening. And I'm just chugging along. So,
yeah. Well, first of all, your strength is so inspiring. And I've ever since that first post, you know, all those years ago, every post that you post, I'm truly inspired because your positivity through this whole thing, I don't know, honestly don't know how you do it, but like
you have to,
right. And it's so crazy to think, as you said, a little bump on your foot. I mean, who even looks at their foot that much? You know what I mean? Yeah. It could be overlooked so easily. And then to see how something like that could be something so serious, so eye-opening because I don't think that people pay attention to themselves, right?
That's the problem. They don't pay attention. And when they do, they're like, oh, well, it's okay. It's no big deal. And then they watch something grow and grow and grow. And I'm thinking, I mean, I watch some of those shows like the Dr. Pimple Popper and
yes, I was know, thinking
my,
that.
My feet are killing me. And I'm thinking, how did you let that thing get so big on your body? Like I was freaking out over this little bump on the top of my foot. And they told me if you didn't come in when you did, you probably wouldn't be here because it went from 1.5 centimeters in October to over 6 centimeters in January. And it spread to my groin.
That quickly.
So it's like, okay, that's a big amount. And if I had just waited and said, oh, it's no big deal and it's nothing, you know, who knows?
Right. You have no idea. So, you know, that's why I think that's a good wake up call for people who are listening. Of course, now my dog wants to be part of this. Sky, you can't be part of everything. Excuse me. Sorry about that. That's the perks of doing a podcast at home when you have everything else around you. But,
hey, is there something else that you need to say?
She's like, I'm not. Okay. I think she's going to leave us alone for a little bit. But yeah, we were saying like, especially with the pimple popper, I watch it all the time and I see the same thing. And it's like, how could you let that go? Yeah. But something like yours, something so small, that's so easily overlooked.
To be ignored. And that one of my friends, her mom had something wrong with her feet. Like she found two things on her feet, whatever, and she wasn't going to go to the doctor. And then she heard about what was going on with me. And so she said, Mom, you have to go. Like, look what's happening to my friend. And this was a little tiny bump on the top of her foot. I mean, it wasn't tiny, but it was there. It was noticeable. And she's like, you have to go. And her mom found out she needed surgery. If she didn't have surgery, they told her she probably wouldn't have walked in a few months. And I was like, see, like, I was happy to be able to help someone, you know, just by saying, like, go. Like, you may not want to go. You may be scared. But, like, go when something can be done before you wait and then nothing can be done. And it's like, sorry, it's terminal. You're going to die. You know?
Absolutely. Early detection. Right.
Why wouldn't you want that? Like, why wouldn't you? To me, like, these past 5 years have been amazing because I was told I may not have them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to me, that was, like, awesome to be. I didn't think I was making it to my 40th birthday. I really didn't. And I'm 41. But, like, I was so thankful to have my 40th birthday mm-hmm. because I was, like, who knew? You know, and that's why, like, I feel like I live life, like, every day is my last day. Because you never know. Like, I could literally walk outside tomorrow and get hit by a car. You don't know that, you know? Like, knock on wood, that does not happen. Right, but, like, right. I'm just saying, like, you never know. And that's why I feel like some people, when they get diagnosed, they're like, the woe is me. And, you know, why this happened to me? And they just kind of, like, become, like, an introvert and, like, don't do anything and don't put, like, positivity out there or strength. And being negative about it is not going to change the fact that I have cancer. You know, being in bed all day is not going to change the fact that I have cancer. So, like, I always tried to, like, volunteer and keep myself busy and do things that I really enjoy, travel, you know, because who knows? You never know. But I wanted that time that I've had, you know, the past 5 years, I wanted to be able to spend that time doing things that made me happy, that I enjoyed. And, you know, if I could help other people and make them happy in the same aspect, I do it. Like, I volunteer for Susan G. Komen and American Cancer Society. I'm the vice president at my nephew's school's PTA.
That's amazing.
I don't even have any kids, and I'm on the PTA, vice president.
Wow.
You know, like, I traveling is one thing that I've done my entire life. So my husband and I, when we went on our honeymoon in 2018, I told the doctors I was being selfish that year and I was going to get married and I was going to have a honeymoon. And if they wanted to come with us on vacation, they could, whatever they wanted to put me on, but I was going to be selfish. And they told me, you're allowed to be, go ahead. So we got married in Vegas. We were gone for a week. We came back and then we went away for 3 weeks in October to November for our honeymoon. And we went to Aruba, my favorite place in the world. We were in Miami for 3 days. And then we were on a cruise for 11 days to 6 different places.
Oh,
and then
fun.
On that cruise, we booked another cruise and we just went on that in February.
That's amazing. So,
yeah. That's figured, yeah, you have to live life.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people forget that. And it's amazing that you realize that so early on so that you can have that mindset. Because I mean, I'm no expert, but I truly believe that your attitude and what you put out into the world. And I know I'm very faithful myself. I think that that all plays a huge factor in your life. And I truly think that that has helped you get through this without a doubt. So that's amazing that you got to do that. And you're right. Everybody has one life to live. And for you to say, yes, I do have cancer, but it's not going to stop me from getting married. And, you know, you found the love of your life. There are so many people who don't find that. So that's amazing that you got to do that.
I'm very lucky. He's amazing.
That's incredible. Someone who will be there for you and support. And probably no coincidence that this happened at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were just dating when this all started. So for him to stay by my side, every single chemo, surgery, he slept in the hospital next to me. In one of those really uncomfortable little chair bed things that they have, but he was there for every single procedure, everything that he could be at, he was at, you know. And I have to say, I know other people who were diagnosed with cancer and their husband or wife left them or their partner was like having an affair because of it, you know. And he said to me, he's like, we're in this together and whatever we have to do, we'll do. And that's what we do. I mean, and I have a great support system with my friends, my family, like everybody. They are amazing. You know, I have a few of our sorority sisters that will come up and we have little social distancing outings now in my backyard and we just hang out together. And, you know, we did arts and crafts one day and we were decorating cupcakes and we get lunch and we just sit and like BS and it's great. You know, it really is nice to have that. And I have to say, I'm very lucky to have all the people in my life that I guess because of I didn't do this so that people would do something for me when, God forbid, something ever happened, but like, I've always done for others. Like, that's just who I am. I've been doing it since I was little. You know, I was always volunteering and doing everything. And because of that now, the amount of people that have supported us through all of this have been, it's like overwhelming. Like, the outpour of love is just, honestly, it's amazing. It's overwhelming, you know, like, it's just crazy. They had a hole at a golf outing dedicated to us getting our new bed that we got. It was called a bed for Bob because all the firefighters know my husband. So they donated money to play at that hole. And then they also auctioned off cornhole boards that somebody had donated and got $750 for the cornhole boards.
Wow.
And they gave us money for the bed and then some. I mean, it's just like things like that. One of my husband's friends collected money from a bunch of their friends and got us all these different gift certificates to CVS and ShopRite and one even for the dog, to a dog store. And like, you know, different restaurants and lottery tickets and, you know, everything. And it's crazy. Like, I've been getting gifts in the mail like every day. My other friend started a meal train for us.
I was going to ask about that. That's also an amazing thing.
Because I love to cook and I love to bake. And it's been so hard lately. Just bending like down, like if I bend forward, I lose my breath. And then like standing for like long periods of time, my body just, it hurts right now. So things that I love to do right now, I can't really do, which sucks. Like, I love going to the food store. I can't even push the cart in the food store. But like, I still take the walk with everybody just because I love going food shopping. It's like one of my favorite things.
Me too. It's a weird thing, but I know
it's
the same way.
Weird, but I just like love it.
It's so fun. Maybe because I love to eat. Maybe do you love to eat?
That's why.
Me too.
So that's like one thing that like I, you know, miss. So the meal train is great because I don't have to worry about cooking or thinking about cooking, or, you know, if we want to order from somewhere, we can, because now we have all these gift cards to different places. So it's been nice. Like, my mom tonight, she cooked. She made quiche because that was something my sister and I both loved. So my sister, my nephew, and my mom and I had dinner together tonight because my husband is with his mom tonight. He had to drop off something to her. So he went up there. But he doesn't eat quiche because he doesn't eat cheese. He's allergic to most cheese. So dairy. Yeah.
That's tough. Fun. But at least you had a nice little night with your, you know, family. And it was nice. It's like a Thursday night. That's like a good night to do something like that, right? Right before the weekend. And, you know, especially when it gets cold out like today, you just want to stay in and
we had soup tonight for lunch. And then we had our quiche. But see, I think I'm freezing out my family because we have the air conditioning on in my house right now. So hot all the time from all the medications.
Okay.
So my mom is like sitting on the couch in like long sleeves and jeans and a blanket, and I'm like walking around like a tank top normally, right? I have a t-shirt on, but like a tank top and like shorts, and they're like, what is wrong with you?
But at least you have a really good support system that understands and they stick with it.
Yeah.
See, that's so important because I think, as you mentioned earlier, what you need a good mindset, but it can't just be you. You need a good support system as well. And so while this is something extremely difficult to go through, I'm happy to hear that you have, you know, what you need to get through this. And you 100% can be that statistic to break this rule that, you know, not the rule, but they say the 5-year mark, you already passed that.
Yeah.
So, and miracles happen. I believe in miracles. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just truly inspired by everything you had to say. I really am. And I
hope they have the two drugs now they have me on work, because the clinical trial was not.
This is something new that you're trying.
So I'm on an old chemo pill that I was on before the clinical trial. When I stopped that chemo pill to be off of it for 2 weeks to start the clinical trial is when they noticed the rapid decline of everything.
Okay.
And then I was on the clinical trial for 2 weeks. And I was coughing so bad. Like, I couldn't get a word out edgewise because all I was doing was coughing. And it was because my lungs were filling with fluid. So when they sent me for the CT scan that day, I knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what. And we found out that my lungs were filling with fluid. My bottom right lobe was collapsed of my lung. And then the two nodules that they were targeting during the clinical trial, they both grew. And one grew like massively. And then today I ended up seeing some of the nodules at the pulmonologist's office. He had the CT scan and they're pretty big. They're like the size of like a gumball.
Wow.
So, you know, from where they were to now, that's like a major, like, you know, difference. But they stopped the clinical trial and then they told me to go back on the chemo pill Votrient that I was on. So I'm back on that. But they were afraid that if they had to start a new clinical trial, it would have to be a 4-week flush out of no chemo cancer treatments at all, like no radiation, no immunotherapy, nothing. And my doctor had said he didn't think my body would be able to handle it.
Okay.
He said, I know mentally and emotionally you're there. And I said, oh, I'm there, definitely. But he's like, you know, unfortunately, we can't control our bodies. And he's like, I don't think your body can handle it. And I said, well, I said that on Sunday before you even said it on Monday. Like I told it to the college, the sorority girls that were here. I was like, I don't think my body can handle it. And I'm not saying like that as like, oh, I'm giving up. I'm not giving up at all. I know I can't control my body, but like here and here in my heart and my head, I'm there, but I don't know how my body is handling it. I've never felt like I had cancer until recently. Like I think Labor Day is when it started. I started to feel like I had cancer. My body was just like all over the place. I felt awful. I couldn't even scoop out chocolate chip cookie dough onto a tray. Like that hurt to do that. And then from there, it's just kind of been going, unfortunately, downhill. They said that my sarcoma is now surpassed what the doctors were doing. The doctors were ahead of it for 4.5 years. And now the sarcoma is ahead. But they put me on the Votrient, which is one chemo pill. And then something, I think it's called Everidge or something like that. It's for basal cell carcinoma, which is a skin cancer. But they've seen that drug and the Votrient together work for people in my situation. So they're okay. Hoping that it will work for me also.
Wow. See, it's like you said earlier, you're open to trying different things, but there's always a risk.
Yeah.
Always a risk. And at the same time, there's a possibility that it can be a huge success.
Work. Yeah.
So I think
it's kind of like a catch-22. Like, what do? Do you do it and risk, you know, it not working? Or I mean, the side effects that I've had from all these drugs are awful. I'm on medication now for the rest of my life because it attacked my thyroid. It attacked my adrenal gland. It was attacking my skin for months. And like, I looked like I didn't wash my face for years because of how bad my skin was peeling. It looked so gross, but it was a side effect of the immunotherapy. I will probably need hip replacements at some point of both my hips because the chemo they gave me in the beginning, it damaged the blood flow to my, like the hip bone. Mm-hmm. So I have avascular necrosis of the femoral hip bone, femoral head of the hip bones. And they're just, the bone is just dying and breaking off. So, you know, it's like things that you didn't think. One of my teeth broke because of the immunotherapy. That was one of the things that could happen. Your teeth could start breaking. So I have one tooth that broke, while eating salad.
Wow. You would never imagine.
There wasn't anything like, it was like eating lettuce, like, you know, lettuce and carrot. I mean, nothing majorly crazy, crunchy or hard or that could break your tooth, but I can't get it fixed because they said, if God forbid something happened and I got an infection there, that could cause other problems. But now I have this tooth that's broken in my mouth. So like I'm constantly brushing and flossing and mouthwashing and, you know, trying to get things that I feel like I get caught on it. But it was something so stupid as, you know, it's the immunotherapy, but it does so much damage to your body. So much. I mean, I ended up getting diabetes because of it. Medically induced diabetes, medically induced pancreatitis, and medically induced hepatitis, because the hepatitis was because they gave me too much of the one medication, and that's, you can get hepatitis that way. And then the pancreatitis, I didn't even know I had it. My numbers were through the roof. They're supposed to be like 35, I think was like the highest that the number should be. I was at 3,300. They're like, you're not in pain? I'm like, nope. They're like, you don't want to throw up? I said, nope. They're like, wow. I was eating food. They're like, you're not nauseous? I'm like, nope. Meanwhile, my friend's father was in the hospital the same time as me with pancreatitis. He couldn't eat. He was throwing up. He was in so much pain. And his numbers were lower than mine.
See, it just affects everybody so differently.
It's medically induced. You know, it's just so weird. But the diabetes, I think, is like the one thing I can't stand. Because my numbers are all over the place and all the medications make them go all over the place. So I end up, you know, with normal blood sugar that is between 70 to 110. And I feel like I have low blood sugar. I get all the symptoms of low blood sugar. And it's like, okay, but this is normal. This is where my blood sugar is supposed to be. So I am better off if my blood sugar is a little higher, because okay, then I don't get all the symptoms. I don't get, like, the back of my neck will get soaking wet. I get really bad headaches. I get nauseous. My stomach hurts. Sorry, hiccups. I get random hiccups now because, sorry, the cancer is pushing on my diaphragm. So if I move a certain way sometimes, or if I don't move at all, I'll just get one random hiccup.
And wow.
Yeah.
See, things that people would never even think of. Mm-hmm. And then you learn, you know, you probably would have never guessed any of these things, right? No, you probably feel all. Like you just learned so much during this.
I feel like I'm going for my doctorate.
I was going to say, you sound like a doctor.
I'm doing my residency.
You sound like it. You
it's,
do.
It's the same. Sometimes yeah. I know more than the doctors know. Because I'll read like the scans that they send and I, you know, look up the different words and I'll walk in. I'm like, so I saw that I had this, 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 and this, and this. And they're like, huh? I was like, well, I read the CT scan. And I looked up the words. And so it means this is, and they're like, oh yeah, we were going to tell you that today. I was like, don't worry, I right now. I figured it out on my own.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But I feel like you have to be your own advocate.
Right.
If you're not your own advocate, if you don't like research things or look things up or, you know, just like read whatever scans that they send you and, you know, make sure you know, okay, well, this number is supposed to be this normally. Why is it like this? You know, my sodium ever since I was diagnosed with cancer is low all the time. And it's gotten to the point where my hands will like shake like this. And I literally thought I had like Parkinson's or something because I was like, why are my hands shaking? Like, what's going on? And they're like, oh, it's because your sodium is low. I'm like, okay. Your sodium is supposed to be, I think the lowest it should be is like a 137. I've had it down to 128.
Wow. So
because it's gone down that low, and no matter what I do, I could pour salt on everything. I can cook with salt. I could eat bags of chips. I could eat pickles. Before I even go, I could literally eat 7 bags of chips, 4 bags of pretzels. Not like I would do this, but like 7 pickles and like probably pour the salt down my throat and my sodium will still come back low.
That is really interesting. Yep. Really interesting.
My potassium is all over the place. Like just things that you wouldn't even think to like look at. I'm constantly having to watch and like take certain pills or go for like an infusion of something or, you know, just different stuff like that. Because if I don't, my numbers are too low.
Right. You have to watch all of it at the same time. It's a lot. That's a lot.
It's a job. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, having cancer is a job. And if you don't have time for it, like, you better make time because that job is keeping you alive.
Right. It's priority, of course.
It is.
That's what I was going to ask, unless you had something else to say about.
Oh, no.
Okay. What I wanted to, because, I mean, you've given such amazing advice, for sure. So I was going to originally ask advice to people who are dealing with cancer, but I think that you had given so many amazing tips. What would you say, what's good advice to friends and family of people? Because I think a lot of people don't know what to do or say.
They don't.
Right?
Okay. So my big thing is don't treat the person like they have a handicap or they're unable to do things. Like let them let you know when they need help. But otherwise, if they're going to do something, let them do it. Because by doing it for them over and over and over again, you make the person feel helpless. And that's like not what they want to do at all. Like, I don't want to feel helpless. Like, I want to feel like I'm able to still do things. So like, you should do that. You need to open up to the person. Let them know how you're feeling, because I know how I'm feeling, but I can't read, you know, you. And if you're not going to tell me things or not open up to me, like, don't treat the person like they're already in the ground. Like, treat them like they're still here, because that's like a big thing. A lot of people are act like you're almost already gone, you know, and you can't do that, because that upsets me, you know, it upsets you. And by not letting things out to the person, like, it's okay to cry in front of them. It's okay to get mad. It's okay to curse, or, you know, be upset or whatever. Do that, because then you're at least you're showing that person, like, you have feelings, like, you know, you're still alive too. Like, you can't just ball it all up, because if you get sick because you're balling up all your upset, you know, you're upset or your anxiety or your, you know, anything that you have that's going on with your loved one having cancer or being sick in general, you know, even if it's not cancer, if it's something else, you need to let it out. Because if you get sick, then you're not going to be there for me when I need you. And I need you at tip top shape, because we all know that the person that's sick is not at tip top shape, even though they want to be. So we need you to be, you know, there for us. But if you're, you know, you need to cry in the corner, cry in the corner, but also cry in front of me, because it's okay. We can cry together. We can talk about it. You know, like, I don't want it to be like a dirty word. You know, sometimes people are just like, oh, well, that's a dirty word, I'm not going to talk about it. But no, I need you to talk about it. I need to know how you're feeling, because I can't help us get through all of it if you're not telling me how you feel or you're not letting it out. So, like, that, those are like my big things that, like, I've learned from having this. And no matter what, you'll never know what the person's going through until, unfortunately, it happens to you. You know, like, we're part of this unfortunate club that we get to be a part of, but you'll never truly understand until you go through it yourself, like, at all. And people also need to realize, like, when you say you have cancer, you don't have to say you're sorry. You know, like, I'm still here. So don't be sorry, because I'm happy to be here. So yeah, I have it, and yeah, it sucks, but it's so great to still be here and still be able to do things. So by you saying, oh, I'm sorry, like, I know, yeah, it's like the first thing that comes out of your mouth that you don't mean to say it, like, everyone says it, but don't be sorry. And another thing I've learned is, like, people, like, right when you're first diagnosed, are there to, like, help out and do everything, and then people just kind of, like, dissipate. And I'm not saying I need help all the time, but, like, it's great when someone can say, you know what, like, tonight I'm going to come over and cook a meal for you, or I'm going to drop off something, or, you know, here's $50 to help with your medications. I know you're having a hard time because now you're not working and, you know, there's only one income in your house or whatever. Like, those little things, like, here and there are great. Like, even, like, just stopping by and hanging out and talking for a little bit, you know, or going for coffee or a meal or something, like, just those little things, like, help you get your mind off of it. Cause, like, I think people think once you're diagnosed with cancer, like, that's all you're thinking about, that's all you want to talk about. That's not, like, I like talking about other things. I like volunteering at different stuff, or, you know, going here. I'm not even a big shopper, but you want to go to the mall? You can go to the mall. Rather go to the food store, but you want to go to the mall, let's go to the mall.
Yeah.
But, you know, just, like, things like that. Like, I don't think people realize sometimes, like, they think if they help, like, the first 5 minutes that you're diagnosed, then everything's okay and that you don't need them. But unfortunately for some people, their journey doesn't end after the first year. You know, they may be diagnosed and the cancer just keeps coming back, like mine, and it's 5 years now. And yeah, do I want to keep asking for help? No. But unfortunately, like, I was telling Mary Kay, I can't sit for long periods of time without, like, constantly moving around or like, you know, being uncomfortable. And, like, I don't want to have to sit there and think about putting on, like, makeup and stuff like that right now to look nice for somebody. Like, if they want to see me like this, then this is how I'll sell the stuff doing the virtuals. But, like, I'm lucky sometimes if, like, my hair is okay, and really not right now. You can tell it just kind of has a mind of its own. It was straight when I started this journey. It is now super curly. I was also 119 pounds when I started this journey. I'm at 183. I was at one point almost 200 pounds. And it's because of all the drugs and the medications and the steroids and everything. And as soon as I would start to lose weight, they'd put me back on another medication and I'd blow right back up. I look in the mirror. I think that's another thing that I should say. I look in the mirror and I know I'm not the only cancer patient, whether it's, you know, somebody had breast cancer and, you know, had to have a mastectomy, or skin cancer and had to have some cut off their face or their arm or whatever. I look in the mirror now and I don't see the person who started this journey. And that could be good and bad. Like, it could be good because I feel like I'm stronger now than I was before. And I was very strong. I was always the strong one in my family. But I feel like as a cancer patient, you look in the mirror and you don't see yourself. And people can say, you look beautiful. And, oh, you look so healthy now. And you don't look sick and blah, blah, blah. I get that a lot. You don't look sick. I wish I wasn't. I feel it every day. Believe me. But I feel like a lot of people don't realize that the cancer patient doesn't see this themselves at all. Like, I look in the mirror and I really see someone else. Like, I don't see myself. And it's because my face is, you know, chubbier and my body is bigger and the weight on my body doesn't help the prosthetic, you know? So that's another thing that people don't get or don't realize. Like, oh, you may tell someone that has cancer, oh, but you don't look sick, or you look so healthy, or you look great and blah, blah, blah. I think you look better now than you did before. I like the way I looked before. You know, I fit into all my clothing. I don't feel like now, like, I feel like I put on stuff and I just feel gross. But that's just me because I don't see myself. And I don't think I ever will see that person in the mirror until I'm done with all of this. You know, like, I have to, I mean, I'm losing weight now. I've lost 15 pounds. And I'm trying, it's not like I'm like starving myself or whatever. I'm eating the same stuff, but I'm just not eating like a lot of crap. And, you know, a lot of times people also don't realize that cancer is, I guess, emphasized more, or it thrives on stress and sometimes sugar, depending on what cancer it is. So stress, like, I just try to be like nonchalant about everything. I try not to stress about stuff because, to me, I look at it as it's not going to change anything. You know, it's going to make things worse if I stress about it. And I can't be bothered with it. You know, like, I am so like drama free. Like, I don't like to have drama in my life. Like, even my wedding, I said to the girls, wear whatever flip-flops you want. This is the color dress I want. Just pick out whatever one you want, whatever works with you. Your hair, do it without, however you want it. Your jewelry, makeup, however you guys want it. Like, I'm paying for your hair and your makeup, but, you know, you want false eyelashes on? We'll put them on. I'll pay for those too. Like, I don't care. I just wanted it to be drama-free because I was so excited to get to that point that I was like, okay, this is good. Like, let's just do whatever. We're chilling. We're in Vegas. Relax. Like, I don't care. Have fun. And I feel like that's how people need to go into these situations. You just have to think about, like, okay, what do I want to do in life? All right, I want to do this. All right, so, like, how am I going to get myself from point A to point B? And, like, let's do it the least stress-free way as possible. Like, you know, just calm. And that's how I think family members and friends also need to be. Like, I think some of my friends and my family, you know who you are out there, are afraid to, like, say things in front of me or get upset in front of me. And I'm like, it's okay. You know, that's what you need to do, because we all have to, like, you know, do this grieving process of, like, the whole cancer diagnosis. But we also need to celebrate and, like, live life. So we can't get to the celebration and the living life part until you're okay with being your complete self in front of me. And if you need to cry in front of me every time you see me, then go for it. We'll cry together. And then, you know what? We're going to go have fun and we're going to do something exciting and, you know, something that we enjoy doing together. I just feel like sometimes people don't think about that and just worry about, well, what's the next step? Well, how are you? No, you can't worry about that. We're taking the medication. It takes a few weeks. I won't know. So when that happens, I let you know. And I feel like I've let everyone know through, you know, Facebook, every time something happens, every time I start a new drug or, you know, there's a setback or whatever. but like from each setback, you're going to have something that's going to bounce you forward. So that's just kind of what we have to do. It's like a ping pong game.
Absolutely.
That's kind of my information, I guess I should, to give out to people, like, just be there for the person, but you have to fully be there.
Be
yourself. Don't half-ass it. Fully be right. there.
That's amazing. I mean, that's so helpful for a lot of people because, like I said, so many people don't know what to say, what to do. Okay. And for someone like yourself to just say, hey, just be yourself, you know, be normal yeah. around me.
Because I'm still me. You know, I right. may have cancer, but I haven't changed and I don't need you to change because of this cancer diagnosis, you know?
Right.
We're still the same people and I'm still chugging along doing my thing. And I feel like if you don't do that, it really hurts the person that is sick, but it also hurts you. And you could end up having like relationships like strained because of it, you know, because people don't want to open up to you or talk to you because they're afraid they might hurt you. Nothing's going to hurt me, you know? And if it does, I'll let you know.
Right.
But I need you to be open and honest with me because I've been open and honest with you. So
definitely. I love that. I really do. I think that that's really important. It's an important message to share with everyone.
Oh, I agree.
And I've said it so many times, but I'm truly inspired by you, your attitude. Yeah. And again, I can't thank you enough for being here, for sharing your story. I know it's not easy for some people, but a lot of people can learn from this. And that's what I wanted with this podcast, was to not only have an outlet for people to express themselves, but also to hopefully spread some type of awareness, whether it's about the cancer itself or giving advice. And I mean, you gave so much, so I can't thank you enough, truly.
Of course. I mean, I wish there was more research on my cancer. Unfortunately, 1 to 3 in a million get it in a year. Wow. And there's like no walks. There's no real support groups. I have support groups on Facebook. And when I was diagnosed, there was a nurse at Hackensack Hospital who also had my type of cancer. And she was an amputee. And they put me in touch with her. In the 29 years that she had it, which is hopeful for me because she's still living. And at that point, she had it for 29 years. I was the first person that she ever met that had the type of cancer. So she's like, we should play the lottery today because we were both in the same room.
Right.
And it was great to talk to her because of her having the amputation. And, you know, just like little things to look for or, you know that was going to happen once I had my surgery. And it was nice. She would even meet up at my doctor visits and sit there and you know, just talk. And
that's amazing.
That was really helpful. So I have to say, like, support groups are great. And if you can get involved in one, I say go for it. It is disheartening, though, for my support group because it's mostly male children that get it every day, multiple times a day. Sometimes there's someone posting that they lost, you know, their wow. son, or there are some older people that have it. And then there's other people that have it and they have NED, which is no evidence of disease. Which is great. I haven't had that yet, but I would like to, you know, but it's little things. Like when I see someone that's in the same situation as me and they were able to find something, or, you know, that we'll talk about different types of treatments too. So that was helpful. Like learning about the Votrien before I took it, apparently one of the side effects is it turns your hair white. So my eyelashes are now blonde. The hair on my arm is now blonde. I have a strip of white that goes down the middle of my head. I use root touch up though, and I spray my head so you can't see it.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. But like, it's just weird, you know, things that I like looked down at my arms one day and I was like, okay, that hair wasn't like that before. And then like looking in the mirror, like even my eyebrows are lighter now because they have all blonde going through it. But like the eyelashes being blonde are weird because they were like dark. I mean, my hair was dark. My eyes are dark. Like, and then to see like these blonde eyelashes, I was like, what the heck's going on? But that's part of the, you know, the symptoms. And then it's nice to see like other clinical trials or just like little things. So I have to say that even if the caregivers or the friends don't want to go to support groups, it's great for the patient, but they also do have support groups just for caregivers and friends and family. And I would recommend at least going to one, just so that you, if you don't want to talk to the actual patient, you can go where there's other people going through what you're going through and just let everything off your chest.
Right.
You know, and I feel like that is very helpful for the people that may be stubborn, that don't want to say something or are afraid or ashamed to say how they actually feel in front of the patient. I told my husband from the moment we started dating, we were friends for 20 years. We dated for 10 and we've been married for 2. When we first started dating, I said, I need you to be honest with me. Like, if this isn't working, if you're not happy, tell me. I would rather you not cheat on me or whatever. I'd rather just be honest. Well, I really shot myself in the foot with that one because he is brutally honest with everything. He does not shy away from telling me exactly what he's thinking, how he feels. And that's great. And I love him for it. And I think that because I said to him in the beginning, like, listen, just be honest with me. You know, no matter what it is, like with anything, you know, be honest. And he has been, and that's great. And I have to say, a lot of my other friends will say stuff to me and like, is it okay if I say that? Or, and I'm like, you don't offend me. Like, honestly, at this point, living with my husband, nothing offends me anymore. Like, the things that he says. So like, you can say anything to me and it's not going to offend me, but I'd rather you say it and get it off your chest than hold it in and make yourself sick. We don't need two people sick. You know, it's bad enough one person sick. We don't need more. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's really powerful. I feel like not many people think like that. So it's a reassuring thing to hear, though. I can say on the other end, you know what I mean? To know that just, again, be yourself and be open and expressing yourself, because there's nothing better than being, you know, transparent, and everybody needs that. So it makes total sense. It really does. And I'm just so happy that you were able to share with us all of this. I really do. It's inspiring and it's really great. And I'm so happy you did this because I had you in mind. And let's go back a second to where you said people don't know what to say. I have to admit, when I was going to do this, I said, I don't know if it's okay to ask, but I said, let me just throw it out there. And thankfully you were super open to it. This was extremely helpful and I really had a great time. And I hope that you'll come back on here, honestly.
Definitely.
I do.
I mean, I'm so happy to help other people. So if this helps one person, you know, or gets a caregiver to be able to say something to their, you know, loved one that they weren't able to say, or a family member or a friend, you know, to me, that I think also helps in the healing process.
Right.
You know, for everyone. So right. I think it's great to just like get it out there. Don't be afraid, you know, and if you do offend somebody, then hopefully they will be able to say like, listen, I wasn't happy with that. But to me, it takes a lot to offend me. Nothing really offends me. I'm just like, whatever. I literally let everything roll off, you know, my back, and I take it with a grain of salt, and I just kind of try to live life and enjoy. And that's what I feel like you have to do. If you don't enjoy, then why, like, what are you doing? You know,
definitely.
Don't worry about everything, because you can't change things. There's things that you cannot change at all. And worrying about that is just going to make you sick. So I just kind of like, all right, well, this is a new drug, a new day. Let's see what's going to happen, you know. And I always check to see, because I always like, if there's any side effect that you have, you know, let me know. And I had my one nurse, Melinda, if she's listening, I love her to death. She's amazing. She says to me, like, email me, call me, whatever. And so I had gone to the pulmonologist today, and my blood pressure is normally like, before I had cancer, it was like 88 over 55. When I'm not doing treatments, it's 88 over 55. When I'm doing treatments, it's like usually like maybe like 110 over like, you know, 50, 60, whatever. Today it was 168 over 122. And wow. I was like, okay. So I contacted her and I said, listen, I know it's probably the Votrient because that's what it does. And it's probably this other drug too added together, but I just want to let you know. Do you want me to like up my one medication? Cause I have to take blood pressure medication because of this. And she's like, yes. And I want you to take this other medication that we're sending in the pharmacy. And I need you to lay in bed and watch a stupid movie and take a nap and relax. And I was like, okay. So she wrote that all in an email. So then she called me to let me know that the medication was sent to the pharmacy and she woke me up, but I answered because I saw it was them and I figured they were calling. She's like, next time you see me, you can punch me in the face. And I was like, no. And she's like, I woke you up. I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, it's okay. I'm like, I wanted to know what you were going to say. I'm like, it's fine. I'm like, I just fell asleep. Like, no, not that long ago. But like, that's another thing. Like, let your cancer patients sleep if they need to. Don't get mad at them if they can't do certain things. Like, I almost felt like, because like I couldn't clean the house at points, like, or I couldn't put stuff in the dishwasher, you know, from the sink, because bending down like that was like literally taking my breath away. I didn't want my husband to think like, oh, she's being lazy, which I know he didn't. But in my mind, that's where I was going, because I was like, I normally do all this. I cook because I love to cook. Like, he cooks too and he cleans and everything. But like, I usually do it because he's at work. So I was home. I was lucky if I could get my butt from the bed to the bathroom to then sit on the couch without like feeling like my breath was taken out, you know, away from me. So I would just say to him, like, I'm really sorry, but can you, you know, unload the dishwasher for me or load the dishwasher for me? And he's like, yeah, it's okay. Like, relax. And I'm like, I know, I just feel bad because I was the one always doing it. You know, laundry, like, my mom has been doing laundry, but she likes to do laundry, so it's okay. But she's been doing the laundry, but like, even like the dog wants me to like lift him up. And I'm like, I can't pick you up. I have a tube in my side. I'm sorry. So when we got the new bed, he wasn't jumping on the bed. He was afraid to get up on the stairs that we have for him. And so my husband would have to pick him up. And finally now he miraculously is in bed when we get home. Or he, you know, when I walked into the bedroom before, he was in bed. I didn't put him there. No one else put him there. He put himself there.
So he knows how to do it.
He knows how to do it. But you know, so it's just like little things like that. So that would be one other thing I would say, like, don't, as a cancer patient, don't feel bad having other people, when you can't do it, do stuff for you. But at the same time, for like the caregivers and the family, don't look at the cancer patient or the patient, whoever's sick, whatever, as being lazy or, you know, not wanting to do stuff, because I know that they definitely want to be able to do it. It's just their body is not allowing them. So like, that's why I said, like, let me do stuff until I ask you to do things for me. And when I ask you, then like, know that I really need you to do it because I can't do it. Otherwise, you know, I would have done it, kind of thing. So that, I know a lot, and I just feel like that's like a big thing, because a lot of people that I've talked to other cancer patients, and like, their spouses were getting mad at them because they weren't able to do things that they were doing before. And it's like, there's a reason why. Like, they want to be able to do it. Believe me, if they could stand on their head, they would be standing on their head. They can't do it. So like, help them out, because if you want your relationship to work, it, you know, you have to give and take, kind of thing. Oh, sorry. It's CVS Pharmacy. They were calling me. So like, it's like a give and take kind of thing. And you have to just make sure that you're there to, you know, the whole death do us part kind of thing in sickness and in health. You know, I have to say, my husband is amazing. Like, I'm very lucky. So I hope that other people out there that have this issue have the friends and the family and the spouses and everything, you know, to be there for them, because that will definitely get you through what you need to get through. If you don't have that support, forget it. It's just going to bring you down.
Absolutely. You need the support. Definitely. I mean, I'm kind of speechless, because like I said, I had all these questions I was going to ask, but no, that's amazing. You went above and beyond. I mean, I really am just so appreciative. You shared so much with us, and I really can't thank you enough for it. I really can't.
Of course. Anytime.
And you're always welcome on here.
Let me know.
I will. I definitely will. And feel free to share with your other friends if they ever want to be on here. You know, this is the start, I'm hoping, of something that will launch and be helpful to others. And I mean, I'm super inspired by it. So,
I think it's great. When you said it, I was like, definitely, because I feel like a lot of people need this, because they don't know what to say, or they don't know what's okay or what's not okay, or, you know, what they should be doing. And, you know, I think that this is really, really helpful, really, really helpful for a lot of people.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. Well, I could talk to you all night, but Again, I want to thank you for your time, for sharing your story. We're rooting for you. And thank you. Please keep us posted.
I definitely will. You know I will on Facebook.
Yes. I love it, though. I'm always on Facebook, and I always look, you know, your messages are always honest, but I feel that underneath everything, there's always a positive
humor. You have to laugh. If you don't laugh about things, you have to, like, that's where you joke. Like, today I got diagnosed with asthma, and I looked at the doctor. I was like, well, I haven't had that yet, so let's add that to the list. And he just started laughing, and he was like, it's like, that's why I like you. And I was like, well, I'm like, you know what? If you can't laugh about it, then I don't know what to tell you. I'm like, you just have to, like, literally make things fun, because it's not like it's a fun thing, but you got to make it fun. And that's how you get through it.
Make the best of it. Absolutely. Of course. Well, if you have anything else to say, you're more than welcome. But thank you, seriously, for all this. And I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. I wish you the best of luck.
Keep being you. Thank you. Keep being you, because you're amazing. And you. I'm sure that you're going to do amazing, and you're going to be that one statistic.
I really do.
And I will keep you in my prayers. And everyone out there listening.
You better.
Leslie, put her in your prayers. All right. Well, thank you so much, Leslie. And keep in touch. And I will talk to you soon.
Definitely.
All right. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye. Mwah.